This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. North Carolina has not dodged the national epidemic of opioid addiction. A 2016 report named Wilmington the worst city in America for opioid abuse, and three other North Carolina towns were in the top 20. Another troubling side effect of the crisis is now coming to light. Heart infections in North Carolina jumped almost 13-fold since 2010 and cost the state millions of dollars. The Centers for Disease Control believes the rise in intravenous drug use and heart infections are linked. Researchers looked at the number from every hospital, all those numbers from every hospital in North Carolina, and the picture is not pretty. Here to explain what's going on is Aaron Fleischauer. He's an epidemiologist with the Centers for Disease Control and primary author of the report. Aaron, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
I suppose we should start with how heart infections are linked with intravenous drug use. Can you tell us that?
Certainly. Well, it's a well-established link. In fact, it's been described since the 1950s, and it's a relatively simple mechanism. Essentially, injection drug users are pushing bacteria from their skin into their bloodstream. It finds its way to the heart or heart valves, where it grows and damages heart valves and causes a whole mess of problems. But the linkage is well established. What we identified, though, was a quite staggering increase in the last few years of these heart infections.
And I'm guessing that the increase in heart infections correlates with the increase in opioid abuse.
That is right. We suspect that many injection drug users are using opioids, but quite possibly could be using other drugs as well.
What kind of infections are we talking about?
Well, the most common infection associated with injection drug use is hepatitis C. And we've also seen those numbers increase. In fact, we've seen a fourfold increase in new hepatitis C infections in just the last few years alone.
Well, you set out to look for the rates of heart infection. Again, there are all kinds of infection that can come from using any kind of injection. And as you suggest, with heart infections, we're not talking, maybe you can clarify this for us, how much of it has to do with perhaps an infected needle and how much has to do with the bacteria on your skin? In other words, there might be infections from different sources, but all based on using a needle, right?
You're absolutely right. In fact, there are probably three common ways endocarditis can be an outcome of injection drug use. One could be unsterile equipment, like an unsterile syringe. The other could be a contaminated product, the drug is contaminated, or poor cleaning of the injection site. Any of those mechanisms can introduce bacteria into the bloodstream.
Now, you set out to look at heart rate infection. What were you expecting to find? You must have had some inkling that there was some kind of increase. What were your expectations?
Well, I will say that all of our indicators of the opioid epidemic have been demonstrating that it's increasing quite significantly in the last few years, whether it's overdose fatalities or hepatitis C. So we were expecting to see an increase. I think we were quite alarmed to see a 13-fold increase in just the last couple of years alone.
Do we have any way of sort of looking back historically and seeing, because there have been ebbs and flows in especially intravenous drug use over the years, have the correlations been pretty similar to what we've seen in the past, or maybe that's not the scope of your research?
Yeah, well, we only went back about 7 years, so I can't necessarily compare it historically. But what I can say is there's been a significant rise in beginning really in 2013. So we're not talking about that long ago, where it really jumped from a low baseline to a quite high incidence rate.
And we're talking about, let's talk about who is using these drugs and the impact not only on their lives, but it also has an economic impact on the state. Tell us who's using these drugs.
Right. Well, the data is suggesting that they are mostly persons of younger age, between 18 and 30. They tend to be more white, living in more rural areas. And when we're looking at some of the census data, they tend to be poorer or unemployed. So all of those risk factors tend to be associated with this outcome.
A fair percentage, I think somewhere around 19% have no insurance at all, if I've got that right. And then another percentage is on Medicaid. So this is, again, in many ways, going to be a public health cost.
You're right. In fact, 42% of our patients were either uninsured or on Medicaid, which suggests a heavy taxpayer burden with that hospital cost. Then we went ahead and looked at what those hospital costs were, and we only looked at the inpatient cost. And the average inpatient cost is in excess of $50,000. And that total cost has increased 20-fold in just the last 5 years alone.
All right, so the costs are going up. This was a study based on data from hospitals in North Carolina. Is there any way to compare North Carolina with other states? Is it correlated, or can we expect to see the same across the country? Is North Carolina an outlier?
Yeah, that's a great question. No, I don't think we're an outlier. I think we are probably consistent with many of the states experiencing this opioid increase, like the Appalachian states, the Northeast, Maine, New Hampshire, the Southwest, like New Mexico and Arizona. So I would suspect we're quite consistent with states experiencing that epidemic.
Obviously, this epidemic is not new, and it has a fair amount of media attention and public policy attention. So folks are working to address opioid addiction in general. Obviously, if you can bring that down, you would assume you'd bring down this rate of heart infection. But you also talk about harm reduction strategies that could also be used to bring down the rate of infection. Tell us more about that.
That's right. I think harm reduction is probably one of the most effective interventions on this epidemic. And it's not just syringe exchange programs. It's not just giving out clean needles and disposing of infected needles. It is establishing that client relationship and linking them to substance abuse treatment. And the data has demonstrated overwhelmingly positive impacts when harm reduction is implemented locally.
Well, and again, a comprehensive harm reduction, which includes counseling. But you get into usually serious public policy debates over whether there's a moral hazard in making it seem more safe to use drugs with, say, needle exchange programs.
Yeah, I use the analogy that we developed with HIV 25 years ago and distributing condoms and educating on safe sex. I think our goal in public health is behavior change is difficult, but if we can make that behavior safer, we can reduce these infections.
What about the approaches and I understand that one of the ways you think we should be thinking about this is very much at the local level, the distribution, if you are engaging in harm reduction or, say, needle exchanges, being local becomes extremely important.
Yes, we feel that all treatment and all public health really begins at the local level. And if we have substance abuse treatment at the local level, I think we're more likely to engage those people who are most at risk.
What's happening? I mean, one of the problems with that, of course, is if you're talking about a high concentration of these problems located in rural areas, we're seeing great reduction, especially in states like North Carolina that didn't expand Medicaid, the harm it's done to our economy by not spending that money, but also the risk that people now face in rural areas is growing by the day. The resources aren't there. It seems to me that the problem is occurring in precisely the place that has been starved for funds, particularly in this state over the past few years.
Without question. Though I would say that North Carolina just passed one of the most effective syringe exchange programs in the country. And in fact, an amendment was just approved last week that allowed local public funds to be used to establish these syringe exchange programs. So, for example, a local health department could establish one. And those are the type of organizations that are linked to these very rural areas and these clients.
What are you expecting, and again, this goes beyond the scope of your study, but I wonder if the CDC has an outlook for the opioid epidemic itself and whether officials at CDC and elsewhere expect things to get worse before they get better, or are there signs that things are turning around now?
Well, that is the great question. I can say, for example, here in North Carolina, our governor is speaking today at an opioid summit and describing our opioid action plan. And this is happening across the country. I think CDC and HHS are giving overall guidance, but the implementation is really going to be on a state and local level. I predict in the long run, if these programs are effective, it will impact these curves and they will start to go down over time.
We talked about the state program here in North Carolina on needle exchanges being exemplary in that it allows local authorities to spend local money on these things and have sovereignty over the programs. But won't it also require more spending at the state level? Won't there have to be more funds available, or do you think that's not required?
Well, right now, state and federal funds cannot be used to establish syringe exchange. So they are a function of local funds and private funds. I would like to see in the future more funding for these programs because they are going to be expensive. And when they are done locally, there's certainly a heavy local cost. But I think the federal government is very serious about this epidemic, so I expect things to change.
Aaron Fleischauer is an epidemiologist with the Centers for Disease Control. Aaron, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
You can find out more about the report at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, the ethics of including pregnant women in medical research. We'll talk about it on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.